Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Crab Feast. You know what it's all about.
This is the Crab Feast. I'm yelling, fuck that. You ain't gotta ask me, cause you could trust that. Every Tuesday, you already knew though. Ryan Sickler, soccer star, JUCO. Above ground, cool goes, better than most. Jay Larson, self-diagnosed. Go down low this week, last week. Here we go again, fuck the Crab Feast.
To the Crab Feast, y'all.
Another Tuesday. Another Crab Feast without ass. Oh.
I
felt like I could have gone forever. I really felt like I could have gone forever on
you
that.
You were going pretty good, man.
Strong. It's good, strong pitch.
I get up there, and then I peter out, Sickle. I'm not.
I don't know when it's coming, though. I don't know when it's coming. But it's good to touch your pitch, as always,
Jay. Oh, it's great to pitch your touch, bro.
On Tuesdays and... Now Thursdays.
And Thursdays. Every now and then.
Every now and then. I don't know every if we're going to do it all then, the time. Baby, you know, every now and then. I don't know about every
Feast of Nation. How you doing? Jay Larson Comedy. JayLarsonComedy.com. Those are where you can find me on the interwebs. Tomorrow night, I'm in San Diego at the Whistle Stop Bar. Please come by and say hello. It's a great little venue, and I'm excited to do it. And then a little ways down the road, I'll be doing the night... where are you? Boston, Massachusetts, April 26th to the 28th at Laugh Boston. Excited to be back there with all you crazy, crazy, crazy Bostonians. I love you to death. And any local shows, Comedy Store shows, I will just tweet out or Instagram that week. Sickle Cell?
Ryan Sickler on all social media, RyanSickler.com. I just want to say I'm glad you guys are enjoying the bonus eps we've been throwing up. And there's more to come from the Crab Feast. Well, you'll see it all at thecrabfeast.com. And as always, thank you guys for buying your merch. We do appreciate you sponsoring the show and repping us out there. And premium apps now, we've been putting those up as bonus apps, too. There's more stuff coming. So.
I mean, you know, they've been there long enough, and if people haven't purchased them, we're glad to put them out there for you guys, and glad you're digging them because they're pretty special.
Digging this week's sponsor, too, aren't we, Jay Larson Comedy?
You know I am. I said it before. I was a fan of Brooklinen before we ever got them as a sponsor, and I have their sheets at home before we ever got them as a sponsor, and we love them. It feels like you're sleeping in a hotel. They're so comfy, and they as they break in, they get even more comfy. You know, like when you reach over the other side of the bed after you've been laying there, and it's cool over there, and it just feels like you have different sheets on at that point. That's how these feel at all times.
They're fantastic.
You spend a third of your life in your sheets, and that makes a difference of how you sleep. If you're cozy in bed and you're comfy, why would you not have great sheets to sleep on? Brooklinen.com has the highest quality sheets with no big markup. Upgrade your nightly routine and help you feel more well-rested every day, which is key. I see it in my kids. When they sleep well, boom, they're just different people. Brooklinen's founded by a husband and wife team, Vicky and Rich Fullup, who were like, hey, you know what? We want beautiful home essentials with no crazy prices. So no crazy markups, no fees. Most bedding is marked up by 300%. That's an insane number.
Ridiculous.
And most of us have no idea how to go shop for it. I still don't know what Threat Crown's good. what? No one knows anything that's going on as far as it goes, which is why I like these guys, because it's their designs are simple. You can mix and match if you want to get like a navy, you know, one to go over the mattress, and then like white with polka dots. You can mix and match and get creative and make your bed more stylish so you feel sexy. Versatile colors and patterns is great. This is luxury bedding underpriced. You have to try these sheets today. Go get them, especially if you've been debating buying sheets. It's just great having good sheets. Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for our listeners. You get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code CRAB at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all of their sheets and comfort.
Oh, come on. Two months?
I would offer that, too, because yeah. I've lived in them, and I know as soon as you get them, you're like, all right, we're keeping these. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code CRAB at brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code CRAB. No promo code necessary for this week's ep. A legend in the comedy world. And we're both super excited to have him on. And please enjoy, ladies and gentlemen, for the first time ever on the Crab Feast, Yakov Smirnoff!
Yakov Smirnoff!
Welcome to the Crab Feast!
Thank you.
Oh, yes, sir.
Thank you.
Good to have you here, man.
Yes, it's great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
You know, I ran into you at the Comedy Store, and like I said, I mean, I got passed by Mitzi in 2004, and your name is a neon in that original room, and there is a select few that's in neon. Yeah. And there was only, I said to you backstage, I only saw Yakov there one other time, and you rolled in like a Humvee, and it was like 2006, and I was like, had just been passed, and like it was like in the this night, like Robin Williams had popped in, you popped in, I was like, what is going on? I didn't get a chance to meet you that night, so when I saw you the other night, I introduced myself, because like when I was a kid, you know what I mean, my mom introduced me to you and Robin Williams and Bill Cosby. And I said to Rye, I'm like, hey, I met Yakov Smirnoff. I said, he should do the podcast. And Rye goes, oh, dude, I just did this story poker game with him. He was fantastic.
That was a lot of fun. Yeah, you were great. I was stoked to have you on.
That was fun.
Thank you for being here.
You bet.
Why don't you, before we get into it, why don't you plug whatever you'd like, your social media, any upcoming dates, anything you'd like.
Yes.
Books, apparently.
Yes. I have two books. Just Yakov.com, Yakov.com.
That was tough to get, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. And you can learn about my dates. The closest ones that I'm in Florida, I'm doing several shows around Florida and the Fort Myers from the 1st to the 4th, and then Sarasota on the 5th of March, and then on the 7th, I'm in Fort Lauderdale. So, yeah, if you look on my website, you'll see all of that.
I feel like on your website, you can probably find out a lot about you.
Yeah, yeah. I think so.
You're dressed so sharp, too. That is a really sharp suit. You look good.
Thank you.
You do
Thank
look
you.
Really good.
Suit every day?
When I go out,
or
yes.
just for the podcast.
Yes.
We appreciate it.
I mean, dressed up for us.
I mean, we do appreciate you coming looking this sharp.
I look
this yeah, sharp.
I
look
good. How many suits you got?
Probably about 15.
15? All right.
All right. So now it makes me want to ask you a question. So we'll have to say this to establish it. But you've done Johnny Carson, which we were talking to you about before. You said 7 times. Jay and I just can't get over. First of all, that's like growing up as a kid for me, too. My grandmother introduced me to Johnny Carson. And she would tell me, my grandfather had already passed. And she said, I used to try to get him to watch this with me every night. And he was always like, I'm going to bed. Then one night he stayed up. And he was hooked. He never missed another night with her. And you to be on 7 times.
First of all, this is also back in the day when Johnny Carson. I know you want to ask something, but I think we both have a lot of questions.
I just want to know, and we can come back to it, if you still have the
this
first
is like
suit.
The KGB interrogation, you know?
Hey, man.
The light is in my face.
Hey, Rush is a whole new thing now.
That's you know, right.
We ain't
so
scared.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows who he's working for?
I just want to know if you still have the first suit you wore on that show.
I do, yeah, definitely.
I love it.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, like doing the Tonight Show now is still a great honor.
I can't fit, by the way. I can't fit
in
that suit.
I didn't want
any
more.
Yeah, thank you.
Out of respect.
Thank you.
Respect.
That was very nice of you. I appreciate it.
It's been let out a couple of times. I mean, were you recognized immediately the next day after doing Carson?
You know, I I tried to get on Carson's show shortly after I came to America. I thought because I had an accent, I had a couple of jokes that
this
I
son of a bitch. Yeah, I slow.
He knew. He knew coming over.
I knew that I wanted to be on that show, but there was a producer, Jim McCauley, who didn't like what I. He didn't think that I was funny. Mm-hmm. And
well,
you're
not
going
to believe this right now. Check this out.
Jimmy! Man, McCauley.
Jazz in here, man.
Judgmental son of a bitch.
Apologize, son. You're wrong.
Give this man an apology.
So yeah, Jim didn't like me. And Mitzi was actually, she liked me from the beginning. I didn't really know anything about Mitzi. I didn't know anything about Comedy Store. I had a plan. I lived in New York at that time, and I had a plan that I was working for this company that was called Greeting Bells, and they were just making Christmas ornaments, and I was packaging them and shipping them to different places, right?
That at was, first, I thought, like, there was going to be some kind of comedy tie-in where you're like, I wrote these greetings.
No.
You're like, no, nothing, you're just packaging in the plant.
I was packaging. I was just sending stuff out. But when Christmas was over and the season was, the lady who employed me, she felt bad for me because she didn't have really much work for me. So she said, maybe you can take a sabbatical and go to California. I know somebody there. And it's a producer of Three's Company, and Three's Company
man, that's one of my favorite shows too.
Yeah, big show, right?
Huge.
Ted Bergman was executive producer of Three's Company. She knew somebody who knew him, so somehow she said, "I can arrange a meeting for you." So
just come back in Easter and help me with the Easter decorations.
We'll call it even.
No, so I figured 10 days would be enough for me to go to California, become a star. And come back
10 days.
And I planned it. I had the return ticket, and I was planning to come back, and at that point buy an apartment for my parents on Fifth Avenue. I had a very clear
10 days.
10 days. Yeah,
10 day plan.
So I go to Hollywood, and I audition at Improv, and they gave me a slot like at 1 o'clock in the morning. Nobody was really there, so that didn't work. So I was disappointed. Then I got an audition at the Comedy Store, but mainly because Ted Bergman would come and see my show. Mm-hmm. And last minute he didn't come, and I was totally bummed. So now it's a day 4 or 5, and I am like, I'm not even close
to buying that house on the Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I was really disappointed. So I'm walking out of the Comedy Store, and I was like, bombed. And Mitzi had an assistant named Chrissy, from English girl. And she runs after me, Chrissy, and she goes, Yaakov, congratulations. And I said, why? What? And she goes, Mitzi liked you. And I said, who is Mitzi? And she goes, she's the owner of the Comedy Store. She liked you. That's a big deal. Go sit, talk to her.
Yeah.
So I sit down next to Mitzi, where my name in neon, that booth. That's booth when we were sitting together for the first time. That's where she used to sit. And so I sit next to her, and she goes, you were very good.
Yeah.
You should stay around. There is always place for good and different.
Yeah.
And I have no idea who I'm talking to, right?
Yeah.
So no clue. And so she said, come back tomorrow and see a regular show. So I come back next Monday, and first person to introduce on stage, Robin Williams. Mm-hmm. Second, Billy Crystal. Third, Jay Leno.
Good God.
Fourth, David Letterman. And fifth, Richard Pryor.
Holy shit.
And I'm sitting on the back of the original room.
Yeah.
And I am...
And do you know how legendary they all are at this moment?
Yeah, okay, well, so. I was... Yeah, even though I was in America a short time, but I was hooked. I wanted to do comedy.
So I knew how big that is.
He had looked them all up online and stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
That lineup.
Yeah, in 78.
Online. That lineup would be a stadium sellout tour if those people were alive.
There's not a place big
enough. Some of them are alive. I shouldn't say they're not all dead. Sorry, Billy Crystal.
But all of that was amazing to me, and I realized that.
And so you went after Pryor?
No, I didn't go. I was just sitting. No. I was just sitting back there. I wasn't even. She didn't want me. I mean, So I watched that show, and I'm realizing that I'm ahead of schedule because only day six, and I've already. I'm in the right place.
You're definitely in the right fucking place.
So I was so excited, and then. You know, but I said, Mitzi, but I don't have a place to live. I was staying at my parents had a friend somewhere in L.A. and I stayed with them. And she said, well, I have a house up on the hill and I'm renting it to like comedians. You can get a room there, you know. So I go, okay. And I said, but I need, you know, my parents are there. And she said, well, what does your dad do? And I said, he is a building construction engineer. She goes, can he be a carpenter? I said, probably. So she said, I'll hire him. Bring them over.
Jeez.
So I bring my parents here, and my dad starts work at the comedy store. Holy cow, as a carpenter.
Your dad has built part of the comedy store.
Well, I built it with him. So
you did.
For the next 2 years, because dad couldn't really pull it off. I mean, he was getting older, and so I was helping him.
Can I ask you, what rooms were there when you started?
Was it just the original room?
So the main room wasn't there? Was that still a music venue?
It was just closed. It was not. There was nothing there. And the belly room wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I was kind of building those booths and
you built things in the belly room and the main room that are still there
today? Yeah, yeah.
Holy shit. Did you know that?
No. Oh my God. I had no idea.
So that that's gave me an opportunity to have a job and have a place to live and take care of my parents and learn about comedy meantime. And then she made me a regular, and so I start performing once a week or something, whatever she would be in a good mood, and I would get a spot. And then I was trying to get on the Tonight Show all of that time, and she thought I would be great on the Tonight Show.
Yeah, four days to go.
but Macaulay didn't like me, and so 6 years it took. After I came to the comedy store, and he would come once a year and he would watch me and goes, no, it's just not funny. And he did the same with Chandling. You know, he would say, no, you're not funny. It's just not funny. And so I kind of moved on. I would start doing more clubs. I was a middle act and I was already doing, and Robin got me movie Moscow and Hudson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was in that. And so I kind of did all this other stuff. Great. And I did Night Courts.
I heard he wanted to get Richard Pryor for that role and then you said
you did Night Court?
Night Court.
I was part of my Thursday night. Yeah. It was Cheers and Night Court, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. So at that time, and then I get, you know, Miller Lite commercial. That was the kind of where Carson saw me on Miller Lite commercial. And
he's up watching TV at home. He's like, who's this guy?
Yeah.
So you're not
Macaulay.
Doing
he's like, huh?
Yeah. And he called, and like, so he says to Macaulay, so where, you know, why aren't we having this guy on, right? And Macaulay said, oh, we were just about to.
Oh.
But right before that, he told me, and the last time he was there, he said, let's just make it easy. You will get on that show when the hell freezes over.
He actually said that?
He said that. He said that.
You're like, dude, I'm from Moscow. That's like every third day of the week.
So I started.
And
I,
feel free to put all this little light on that ice in hell. Keep it cold for me, Blake.
So I started watching the Weather Channel, you know, to make sure that I don't miss that day.
Yeah. Backdoored them.
So then I said I would like to do it on Thanksgiving. Or night before Thanksgiving. And it was about, it was October or so.
This son of a bitch coming here taking our holiday.
Calling shots, too.
Taking our holiday.
And he was like, he was so pissed at me, like going, so are you going to tell me now when you're going to get on?
Seriously.
Yeah. I go, I'll tell you why I'm saying that, because I really have a lot to be grateful for, and I would like to say thank you to America. And guess what? I got on the night before Thanksgiving.
Christmas Eve.
No.
Christmas Eve.
Which the night before, it rolled into, right? Because it was coming on 11:30 then?
Yeah. Everybody's up. Yeah. Family's all together, hanging out.
It was perfect. It was perfect. And it was great set. And Carson called me over. Which I didn't expect.
He brought you to the couch?
Yeah, yeah.
First time?
First time, yeah. And
what was Johnny wearing?
Do you remember?
I would.
Of course I do, yeah.
What was he wearing? Was he wearing a plaid coat?
Plaid coat.
Was he smoking
gray.
Then?
Not that show, no. I had one when he was smoking, but second show after that was bad. But first one was perfect because he was impressed. Mm-hmm. He called me over. I sat down. Jimmy Brogan, do you know? You know Jimmy?
I don't.
Jimmy is a comedian. Still performs a lot, and he is Jay Leno's great friend. And he worked as a producer later for Jay on the Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. But Jimmy was there, and he said, "You know, when you sit down, if he ever calls you back, just be ready." Because they might go to a commercial. You don't have time.
You're like, I was ready when I was making those Christmas tree ornaments. I've been rehearsing this.
And
I
so
my vision board.
Yes, exactly. And I sat down and I said, you know, Johnny, you know, I love America because you have things in America that we didn't have in Russia. Like policemen have warning shots. And he almost fell off the chair. Genuine Leaf almost fell off the chair. And that when they said, we'll be back.
Oh, did you look at Macaulay? What did Macaulay say after
Macaulay
all that?
Came over. So I'm sitting next to Johnny. So Johnny's here. And Macaulay comes over next to me. And he goes, could you do another set like this, like a couple of weeks from now? And I
Jesus
go,
Christ,
know,
Tonight
I know,
Show.
I know. And I said,
for Johnny.
I said, when the hell freezes.
Did you really?
And he laughed. And so, but
so wait, how did you find out that he, that Johnny had saw
he,
you and then said to Macaulay, though?
Macaulay told me.
He did tell you.
Yeah. Macaulay told me. Actually,
he said, I was just about to book him, even though he was never going to book
exactly,
you. He never confessed to Johnny, though, did he?
No, yeah. No. And he called, and he actually called Mitzi. He didn't call me. Well, at that time, there was no cell phone, so it was like I was in Raleigh, North Carolina, doing a show at the club, and I get a call from Mitzi, and so please call back. So I call her, and she goes, guess who called? I go, who?
I love your Mitzi.
Macaulay. Oh, I go, why don't you tell him to go shove it? And then I said, no, you know what? On the second thought, let's not.
Yeah.
Let's not. So, yeah. So
that's
that was
fucking great.
Yeah,
that's amazing. That's it's funny because Mitzi really had that kind of relationship with comedians back then. Like, you were like, she was the one giving you the breaks, but
like
you guys
mom.
Were like friends and mom
and
family.
Taking care of your family. You didn't even know your father. Uh-huh. Had no idea who he was. But
and
was
I got to be honest, I've sat in those booths. They ain't comfortable. So clearly, she was doing the thing.
I mean, it's been how long?
You think they break
but
in
the rest of us?
I mean, I know in Moscow they're comfortable, but here they're a little more cushy. What so when you're living in that house? Oh wait, so I asked you, did people start recognizing you after doing that Tonight Show?
Because at that point I was already. Did Moscow and the Hudson. I did Night Court.
Oh, yeah.
So I had some, and Miller Lite commercial was probably the biggest.
What was that commercial?
It was, in America, you can always find a party. in Russia, party always finds you.
That was it.
So a kind of, I mean, it was like, you know, it was me in the bar sitting with several pretty girls and kind of similar to like, you know, that the most interesting man in the world. That was early version of this. So, and I'm sitting with the beer and I'm going, but, you know, in America, you can always find a party. In Russia, party always finds you. And, and that was it. And that was popular. It kind of opened a lot of doors. I had an interesting story that kind of, because of that, I was in Washington, D.C., and I was performing at the Comedy Cafe. And after the show, this guy comes over to me and he said, I'm chief editor of Washington Times, and I have President Reagan and Nancy Reagan as my guests next month at my house.
At my house?
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like to be our guest? Would you like to be our guest?
Do you understand the level of the tier of human being that is on this little rock? To go meet them at their house pretty remarkable.
Right,
but to have them come to your home while he was president, that's just.
Yeah.
I was hiking at Fryman Canyon a couple years ago, and Clooney had Obama at his home, and they had cut off the hike, and they were like, "You're the last one allowed up, and when you go, you have to go out this way, and they'll be waiting on the other." There were helicopters all around.
Right.
And it was hours before.
That's right.
You know, they were big time prepping to protect him up there.
Yeah. So
big time prepping, huh?
Big time. BTP.
Oh, yeah.
You know how they do it.
So at first I thought he might be full of it, you know, but then he, next couple of days, he called me and said, "Here, a ticket is waiting for you. I'll meet you at the airport. You'll be one of 17 guests we have. And, you know, I'll just meet you there."
I mean, that must have been a hot topic for you. I mean, Reagan, Moscow. I mean, and like you're a comedian from, I mean,
totally. Well,
huge.
That's why
everything
he invited
Russia
me.
At
why
that
do,
time. Sure.
Yeah. Why do you think he invited me? Because he liked my jokes. They were all about Russia, about coming to America. So he, his name, he's passed on now, but Arnold de Borchgraf. And he's a smart guy. And he said, "Hey, there's a guest that would be entertaining for Reagan."
Yeah.
So I didn't know. I'm just a guy working in the comedy club, right?
I love it.
So,
I mean, just think about that would be like for us today to go to D.C. to do a show. And they're like, well, I mean, Trump, I guess that would kind of make you be like, I don't know. But like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, man, why don't you come to dinner and get the president? They'd be like, what? Can I wear this?
Right.
I mean,
you're not even going. But that's the thing. Yeah. You're not going to D.C. You're just going to some guy's fucking split level out in fucking, you know.
But what do you mean?
In Maryland somewhere. It's somebody's house.
No, I know, but I'm saying he got
the White House.
I understand that, but he got
the gig.
The gig was in D.C. Were you always wearing suits from jump? Even when you were like, open mics in Russia? Where were you doing stand-up?
They're clubs, but they're not like comedy clubs.
I can't imagine. There's comedy
trains
going on.
And shit.
No, it wasn't
killing
that.
Killing that Siberian Express, y'all.
It wasn't that bad. It was okay. It was, it gave me a start, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I was pretty, you know, successful at that time. And So I go to Washington, meet this guy. He meets me at the airport, and we're driving to his house, right? And it's getting dark. It's probably about 6 o'clock, and the helicopters are hanging over the neighborhood, and the FBI just blocked off
everywhere,
right? And so I'm like going, oh, this is not good, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm sitting down in the passenger seat, right? And Arno is, you know, they stop him and they ask him for an ID, and he gives him an ID, and he said, "You have another form of ID?" And then, okay, he gives him another one. He said, "Step out of the car." And he said, "You don't understand. President is at my will be coming to my house." And he said, "We don't give a damn. Step out of the car." And they searched the guy, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going, I'm dead. I mean, those machine guns are there for a reason, you know. Yeah. So I'm, you know, and so he finished with him, and then he shines the light on me, and he goes, Miller Lite commercial, right?
I swear.
Go in.
You're like, perfect, because I got an AK-47 right here.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you now go into the home, and do you perform in the home, or are you just a guest?
No,
you
build a couple just benches.
Yeah.
Build a booth over in that guy's house.
No.
Was it like a ritzy fancy house, like a big deal? No, I mean, 17 wasn't. Dinner guests. How big was that dinner table?
It wasn't. I mean, it was actually two dinner tables, I was seated with – so Nancy was at one table, and Ronnie was another table.
Ronnie. Unbelievable.
Who else was there? Do you remember the other guests?
Yeah. There was Ambassador of France with his wife, Baker, Secretary of Finance. Arno.
No pressure.
Yeah, Arno. Yeah, it's been what? 35 years ago, yeah. So, yeah, it was a nice group of people. But what happened when the president came in and they introduced me to him and said, Mr. President, this is Yakov Smirnoff, he's a Russian comedian. And he just said, well, have you heard this joke? And he started telling me the Russian, he collected a bunch of Russian jokes.
Yeah.
So
he was ready for Carson.
Yeah.
He sat on that couch. Yeah. He was ready.
Yeah. As we sat down and he was sitting across from me and we just kept saying, and so it became kind of like a show in a way because they would say, Mr. President, tell him that one. And they would, and then I would rebuttal with another joke and then he would come back with another joke. So it was just like dinner. So Arno Borchgraf knew what he was doing, getting this kind
for
of
sure.
Entertainment. And it was also an interesting night because that night, Reagan sent helicopters, military helicopters to scare Gaddafi in Libya. He wanted him to know that we have the power to kind of destroy. Right?
I always liked Gaddafi.
You did?
No.
Yeah.
He was colorful, though, you know?
So behind the president, and they explained that to me earlier, they showed me what happens when the president comes to somebody's house. They create like a hospital in one room that totally has everything.
Holy shit.
Everybody get naked and get in the kitchen until we get Ronnie situated.
So the hospital is just in case something happens.
What do they put in there?
It's a makeshift
table. It's a makeshift.
It's probably Novocaine, I bet. And there's
they just want to put some Percocets. Quick as possible.
Everything. It's what do they call that? They call it they like
take them down tranquilizers.
But they call it like a.
Gosh, so irreverent. You're so sacrilegious. I'm like going, this is real stuff.
No, but I'm dead serious. What do they call it? Like a goddamn
triage.
A triage. Yeah, yeah, they probably have that kind of
exactly kind of that. Now, so and then they block all the windows with the plywood, so nobody can see.
Really?
Every window. Shit. Yeah. So it's really set up. So that night. They had this Marine with the football, which is the briefcase that has all the codes for nuclear attack.
Oh, fuck. I would just be terrified to look at that thing.
So he's standing behind Reagan. So I'm sitting.
He's big.
He's big.
Yeah.
And no smile, you know, just. And I'm trying to tell him jokes. And I'm looking at this guy and he's like.
Laughing.
Oh, you had him laughing?
Well, he wasn't laughing out loud.
For him, he was laughing.
Yeah. So I'm like thinking, I can't bomb here because...
No pun intended.
Right.
Yeah, because got the then,
yeah.
Yeah. So. You know what? I got to be honest. I heard you tell this story somewhere else, and you had said that Reagan choked, and you had to give him the Heimlich, and the doctor... from Triage was like, keep your hands
off.
He's
lying. He's lying.
That is insane, man. Going to dinner with Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
Whew.
Well, then you mentioned writing jokes for Reagan.
Yeah.
Now, how did that come about?
After that, the Dana Rohrabacher, who's now the Congressman Rohrabacher, you don't like him?
No. Do we like him? God damn it.
Yeah,
hey, Rohrabacher! Come here, man. We did our research, Yakov. We know.
We knew you'd be talking about.
Hey, Congressman, come here, man.
He was his head writer. So he contacted me after that, after the I guess the news were that I was funny, I guess, you know.
And yeah.
So he contacted me and says, you know, would you like to spend some time, you know, with the president and, you know, and,
Jesus,
you know, we have.
Christ.
Yeah. So here's the deal. He's going, we have an event that's coming on, but it's nobody knows about this, so it's like really you can't say it to anyone. But Reagan's gonna go to Russia for the first time in like 20, 30 years, whatever it was last time
any U.S. president had been,
huh?
That any
U.S. president, right. So he's gonna do meet with Gorbachev for the first time. And he's going to do a speech.
No.
Yeah, in front of all the politicians in Russia. So we would like you to read the speech and see if you have some suggestions, and perhaps some humor might be good too. So I'm like,
basically, they're like, listen, you know what the fuck they'll laugh at. It's on you. Figure out how to help us out.
Kind of. So I was a little nervous because I'm thinking, if this doesn't work, I don't have any countries to go.
Yeah.
Right? Where am I going?
Right? Yeah, right.
Where
it's
am I
over
going?
For you.
So I was, but I also knew that if I, you know, how do you say no to something like this? So I read the speech. And I didn't like the speech. I thought it was not, you know, the tone of the speech was kind of, it was talking down to the Russian people and the Russian politicians. And I said, that's not going to get you anywhere. I said, I'm going to, do you want me to be honest? And he said, yes, I wrote the speech. I had other people writing it with me, but I want to know what your opinion is. And I said, it needs to be maybe sharing some American experiences, but not telling them that they're wrong and we're right and stuff. So, okay. And they changed it. So then he comes back to me and says, you know, why don't you rewrite the speech? And I go, you're serious? He said, I said, I don't even speak English.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and he said, no, I think you should rewrite it. So I rewrote the speech and I put a bunch of jokes in there and they liked it. And basically the president was, and I was watching this, live broadcast in my home in Hollywood, and I'm like, and it's coming from Moscow, and I'm like, I can't, you know, kind of understand this.
Yeah, it's surreal.
Yeah.
You wrote the speech the president of the United States gave to your country.
I rewrote.
Rewrote. Well, I mean, I got a feeling like it was a full rewrite. I feel like it was a full rewrite.
I'm not taking credit for that. No.
You also said that you created the slogan "Say No to Drugs," right? That Nancy.
And where's the beef?
No.
That's you, right? Where's the beef?
No,
that's not you.
No, that's Forrest Gump. That's Forrest Gump. You got me confused, guys.
Hey, I mean, obviously they paid you for that, right? For writing the speech? No, they just like, hey, you want to do this for both of your countries?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What'd they tell you? Look good on your resume? Give you that bullshit? Give you some free tickets?
You don't have to. Come on. To talk somebody into this kind of stuff. You know?
Yeah, that's not true. When it's the CIA and they're carrying guns and shit. Like, oh, I'm happy to do that.
Sure.
Did you have citizenship at that point?
No, not yet.
How amazing is that?
I mean.
No, I got I was sworn in 86. This was probably 84, maybe.
I mean, what was the test for you to get your citizenship? Was it just this?
Yeah, I mean, I wrote that speech that ended the Cold War. You know, so that one. Whatever you guys want
to
do.
Went head to head with some knock knock jokes of Ronnie up at the house.
Whatever you want to do, guys.
Pretty sure I'm good here, guys.
I've just hung out along, with fellas. The president of your country. Pretty sure I'm
Why don't
good.
You just wrap this up?
That'd be just great. Go ahead and make me a dual citizen here, guys.
That's great.
That's killer, man.
Man.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you said that you Mitzi put you up in the Comedy Store house.
Yes.
How long did you end up living there for?
3 years.
3 years.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was living there while you were there?
Andrew Dice Clay. Mm-hmm. And Tom Wilson. I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
Remember
yeah.
Tom? Tom was...
Tom is still doing stand-up, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A lot
yeah.
of most people know... I mean, his big was... Back to the Future.
Back to yeah. the Future. He was yeah. Biff.
Yeah.
Biff, the, yeah. And so, and then there was Argus Hamilton, who's still doing comedy.
Still
doing it. And, but the interesting part, there was kind of some rooms you never knew who's going to end up there because it was like a party house. It was like right next door. So Sam Kennison would spend the night. You would have Robin and bunch of guys would come and they would do drugs there. I was so naive about this kind of, I didn't know anything about it.
You're like, guys, I do Miller Lite. Okay.
That's all I do. Yeah. Right. And I go to bed early because I got to get up at 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock to go built booths
yeah.
that you were not comfortable in.
Yeah. So
I mean, I was planning it then, right? Yeah. So I would go to bed early, and they would just come to the house like at 1 o'clock in the morning, and they would party till like 6 o'clock, and I get up about that time, and when I come downstairs, it was a big house, and go downstairs, and there is a big table there, and there is a mirror on the table, and I had no idea what was the mirror for. I see like white powder on it, some left, you know, and I'm thinking they were eating donuts. and this is like an American tradition yeah, sure, to eat it right. off the
mirror.
Of the mirror.
Yeah.
And so I tell Argus next morning, I go, Argus, why didn't you guys like use dishes? Because then you can just put them in a dishwasher and, you know, and he would laugh and nobody would tell me what's going on.
Yeah.
And it was like for weeks that this was, and eventually said, you know what they're doing there? They're doing cocaine. I go, oh, that's the white powder. Oh.
So was everyone, I mean, who did you even have to relate to? Because, I mean, think about it. You're getting up at 6 a.m. For you got to get up and work or... Where do you go for those guys? You know, I'm not saying they came from money, but at least they came from the country that they're in.
Yeah, but you know what? We had, I mean, it was a fun place. I mean, Andrew and I were pretty...
What's so funny?
I'm laughing. You said they came from the country they're in.
Well, what I'm saying is the stakes are a lot higher for you.
I understand. I laughed the way you said they came. Yeah, they were born here.
But they were my... I mean, I was learning English from Dice. Right?
Oh, my God. That is great.
I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was learning how to date American women from Dice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a good relationship we had.
I'm sure. God, that's amazing.
Yeah. And I remember one time I liked this girl that I was dating, one of the waitresses from the Comedy Store. And I was getting serious and, you know, and I said, I want to buy her a gift. Andrew, what do you think? You know, Dice, what do you think I should get her? And she goes, I'll take you to a jewelry store. Let's go buy her a ring. So I bought a ring and bring it back to the house. And I said, I showed it to Tom Wilson. I go, is this a good gift? And he said, this is an engagement ring. I go, well, Andrew told me to buy it. And he said, Yaakov, Andrew is not a representative of human race. You can't You can't take advice from him.
Oh my God.
So yeah. So it was fun experience to live there. There's no question. I remember when Andrea and Sam Kennison got into their first, they would do like a fake fight, and they would scream at each other. And I remember probably the first time it happened that I was right between those two.
I mean, that's two loud screamers, too. I know. Man, especially Kennison getting
right,
at
right, right, right. And so, and I'm standing there in between them, kind of going, come on, guys, you're friends. And it's all make-believe. It's not, they have nothing to be upset about.
And you know it's make-believe.
Yeah. I knew it. So, but I'm kind of playing. I say, hey. And then they keep screaming and screaming. I said, okay, I got to go to bed, okay? Why don't you go down to the comedy store and scream, right? So Sam goes, I'll do it. And so he goes on stage, and it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I stayed up for that. I went downstairs to watch this, and Sam starts screaming in some person's face, right? And his face gets red. I mean, that was normal Sam stuff. So that's how it was born.
You're saying that's the birth of the, oh my God.
I mean, think about it. That's what they were doing.
Yeah, well, exactly. Obviously it had to come from
something. He was doing it in real life, sure. Right? I mean, it wasn't like invented that night, but it was just applying it to the audience.
Right.
I don't think he ever did it in any way.
Wow. That, again, I brought up my grandmother and Carson. So when I was living with my grandma when I was 19, 18 and 19, and we put Sam Kennison on for her. And we knew it was a gamble. And we're like, listen, just going to give you a heads up. Language you're not going to be a big fan of. But it was Dangerfield's Young Comedian special.
I was on that special.
Yeah, you were.
Yep.
And she's like,
where was that shot? Was that shot at Dangerfield's in New York?
And it was HBO, right? HBO. Aired on HBO.
HBO.
And
my career went like,
it was, who was the guy that did the football character?
Bob Nelson.
Okay. Nelson. And then it was you,
Saget,
Dice.
I think that, no, Dice wasn't.
Dice was
show.
A different one. Uh-huh. That's right.
Yeah.
And Kennison.
Did you say Saget?
I think Saget. I think Saget was on there.
And my grandmother, right away at first, was like, "Oh, turn this off!" And we were dying. We're dying laughing. Yeah. And then he did the bit about his girlfriend wanting him to fuck her harder, and he started acting like he was driving the car into her, and he's screaming. Ah! My grandmother started laughing so fucking hard. She could not stop. She could not stop. She said, "He's funny. He's funny. I said, he's different and funny." Yeah. Yeah, he was great. Man.
Yeah.
What did your parents think? So did you guys all come over here together, and your folks?
Yeah.
And so were they supportive of comedy from go? Like, how did they react to that?
Well, they weren't crazy about me doing comedy in Russia because that wasn't like a normal communist path to...
You think?
So they weren't crazy about that.
Yeah.
But I stuck with it and started making money. And when I started making money, then they thought that maybe that's okay, you know. So when we came to America and I said, I'm going to do comedy, that was a little scary for them. But I was determined to, so I would just go to clubs. And it was hard. And my mom especially, she was like worried that I would, you know, stay at those clubs till 2-3 in the morning and then take a subway to back to, you know. So it was not easy. But little by little, you know, I started doing more professional gigs and moved to California. And at that point, they were happy. They knew that it was my calling and they were supportive.
I mean, talk about the American dream. I mean, to become a comedian, famous.
And you know, I mean, think of a lot of famous comedians have never written or even met the president. I mean, that's impressive.
Yeah, I mean.
What you had told us before we were talking, before we recorded about doing gigs, and you said you did cruise ships. So did you, was that between, was that Russia before the U.S., or did you also do that once you got to the U.S.? When did you do
I actually did the Russian cruise ships. I called them the love barge. And, but I did that there, and that's where I kind of got an idea of about America and got more information because there were a lot of tourists. And that's where my mom, I invited my parents one time. You know, and they...
Man, comedy's gotten your parents a lot. Cruises,
yeah,
New York,
yeah.
L.A.
Oh, yeah, yeah, man. Yeah. Well, they traveled with me around the world. They went, they were invited to the White House.
Really?
Yeah.
Your dad's so, like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm still working on this booth.
Yeah. So they were... so for me, the cruises... was something I really enjoy, and I still do them. I was just I work in the Regent cruise line, so they go around the world. So I was just in Vietnam, I was in Thailand,
whoa,
and
man.
Singapore, and so I do shows on the cruise, and you know, it gives me a chance to travel wherever I want to go. Yeah. So yeah, that continues to be. But my first cruise company that I worked was Royal Caribbean. And they just had their first ship. It was Song of Norway, and I guess my neighbors in New York helped me to fill out or make a resume. And I told them that I worked on the cruise ships as assistant of cruise director. Yeah, but I didn't say Russian cruise ships. I just said cruise ships, right? So this resume was sent. They helped me to send it out. And I forgot about this. And at that point, I moved to Florida for a short time, and well, because there was not enough work in New York as a bartender where I was working. So everybody kind of migrated to Florida, so I went there. And then I get a call from my mom, said, guess what? Somebody just called from Royal Caribbean, and they need you to come and get on board today. So I guess they had a fallout or something like that, right? So I...
Barry Diamond canceled?
Yeah, I guess so. So I go there, and the ship was about... And I quit my... You know, I told my manager, I said, listen, this is a great opportunity. I want to go. And he said, go for it. So I go on the cruise, and they sail off. And then they realized that I don't speak good English.
or any of it.
But they already hired me. And so we're going to around Caribbean islands. And I'm in charge of excursions for, you know, this was
like
my
going off
position.
The boat?
Yeah. So I'm supposed to be like, you know, so I think there's still people in St. Thomas that are still looking for that bus because I wasn't ready for that game. So, but once we sailed, they couldn't fire me right away. So they had to get me back, to Miami, and then they said goodbye. But you know, so yeah, so I had a lucky break, but then I was so sad that it wasn't my long-term career. And then about 5 years later, they hired me as a star entertainer and was paying me like $25,000 for a week.
Man.
So I'm like going, I went from 500 a week to 25,000 a week. That's
a good jump, man.
That's a pretty nice good jump.
Gotta see what you did on that resume, man.
That's right. That's
so were you, when you were doing those shows, were you doing an hour at a time? Like, did it help you develop your material? Because also, like you said, you know, and so quickly and naively, when you said Russian cruises, I thought Russian guests. But of course there are going to be international guests, people from all over the world getting on these cruises to go. So you're getting a flavor of everything in that room instead of just Americans or
all
Russians.
All kinds of flavors.
I mean, all kinds of
flavors.
It's like
a buffet, right?
Like Benetton. Right?
It was. It was a buffet.
I'll bet.
Yes, yeah. And,
no
and
suits,
very attractive women
from all over
the world. And
I'm sure you
the
did
star,
all right on those cruises.
Star entertainer. Yeah.
Star entertainer.
Yeah.
The King of the Black Sea, man. That's your nickname.
It wasn't bad.
Good for you.
But I'm not missing it. You know, it's good to be here.
Yeah, to be home. So wait, you had told us you spent time in Branson bartending?
No. Bartending was a long time ago. Bartending was when I...
When did you learn how to bartend? Were you bartending in Russia before you came here?
On the cruise, man.
No, before. I saw bartenders on the cruise, and I kind of... It was actually a clever move on my part. I'm just saying that it was... I was trying to figure out what am I going to do in America where I can learn English and practice my jokes.
Yeah.
And be in the area where
almost
entertainment.
Like a stage. Yeah. I bartended for.
Did you?
Maybe 10 years.
There you go. So.
Given a lot of massages at the bar where you work? Everybody massaging?
No.
Right,
just.
Right, normal.
Yeah.
Sure.
I once said on the podcast that when you go to restaurants, the staff at restaurants, bartenders, waitresses, and stuff, they get super familiar and touchy and they give each other massages. Do you not agree that even in your experience of working in restaurants, people get very.
You said no.
Yeah, well, you set them up in a weird way.
What's so weird about that? I just asked if they were massaging.
It was part of your job portfolio, massaging. Do you get what I'm saying?
No.
Did you ever date any waitresses or bartenders?
Yes.
That you were working with?
Yes.
And was there ever just hooking up? Yeah, everyone was just fucking, you could do whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Yaga.
Yeah.
Way to yes and it, keep it going.
Well,
thank you.
So yeah, no,
he's a professional guy.
That was nice.
7-time Carson veteran. I knew I could count on you. I would love to see people come like, hey, can I get a whiskey sour? Like, you're like, I make a white Russian, I make a black Russian.
That's it.
I don't know what to tell you.
Or straight
up. My father-in-law, man, gets black Russians. That's his drink. If he gets a drink, he'll always be like, can I get a black Russian with a Kettle One and a lot of ice, a lot of ice. And we make fun of him all the time for getting that drink.
Well, I didn't know any of the drinks. I mean, they had vodka, 2 glasses of vodka in a bottle. Right. That's the only variety we had. So I
that's
had
not variety at all.
Yeah, so I had to learn. So I spent, my parents, we had to pull together all the money we had. And I knew, and there was an ad in New York that there was a bartending school.
Yep.
And you can pay $200 and you can get a mixologist degree in, I think it was like 2 weeks or maybe.
Sounds right.
Yeah. 10 days maybe. And I don't speak English. So I'm going, how am I going to understand what they're going
to
say?
I can't even imagine going to Russia right now and being like, let me just take a course in
just
how to make
in there. I'd just
booze.
Be standing there.
So I had that big tape recorder like this big, you know, and I would bring it to that and record every session that they would do. And, you know, visual, I could see what they were doing.
Yeah.
But, you know, but at that time, I already had a girlfriend, an American girl. And that was also very strategic because I asked everybody I knew or met, I said, do you have a girlfriend for me? And people were looking at me like I'm nuts. And then eventually somebody said, you know what? I might.
Yeah.
And I go, okay. So
I'll take them.
And yeah. And she had a nice place in near United Nations in New York. And we bartending school was not far away. So after that, I would go to her place and we would listen to that tape and mix some drinks. And that was my homework.
Yeah.
I'm sure you really
enjoyed studying.
You
were a hard worker there.
Yeah, I'm sure you enjoyed.
Well, I was very driven too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah,
like
you've done quite a lot, actually.
So I... So that helped me learn English and helped me, you know, socially. And so everything, you know, I got to, so, and by the end of the school, they would try to help you with employment. So they sent me to this restaurant. It was in Lincoln Center. It was a really nice upscale restaurant. It was kind of in the basement. But it was called Monk's Inn. French restaurant, and everybody, all the waiters wore monk uniform, and they didn't speak.
This is perfect for you.
So I went like, that's my place, right? So they gave me a uniform, and they put me, but they gave me a job behind the bar, at service bar.
Gotcha.
And so in the beginning, you know, all the waiters were friendly and they were nice and they were like saying, hey, welcome, blah, 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 where are you from? And I'm explaining what I can. And I said, I just finished bartending school and, you know, and so they're okay. And then 5 o'clock hits and the traffic, the people start coming in for dinner.
Yeah.
So these waiters are going, okay, I need a gin and tonic. I had Bloody Mary. I had this. And I'm like, what? I, and I'm making one drink, but they need 10. And the whole thing is just crazy. And so now they're jumping over the bar and they're all mixing their own drinks because they can't wait for me to do it. So by the end of the night, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning. I'm realizing I'm going to get fired. There is no way they're going to keep me.
Royal Caribbean all over again.
Yeah. I mean, it's scary, you know. This was actually before Royal Caribbean. This was before. And so then one guy, the waiter, I was like sitting there going, oh, this is no. And he took a pity to me and he said, I'll teach you. There's only like 6 drinks that we normally you just need to learn how to do that and do it, you know, I'll show you. And so we stayed like till 4 o'clock in the morning drinking all those drinks. And,
oh, man.
And I said, why are you doing this? And he said, you know, I have a son in Czechoslovakia and I just hope that if he needs help, somebody can help him.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
That's amazing.
You know, that's when I learned how to bartend. It's a really good friend of mine, Tony Jones, mm-hmm. Who Rye knows. And I used to wait tables, and I was like, hey, man, I want to learn how to bartend because I was like, it was the same thing. The money was good, and like you can interact better. You're kind of like running your own business, you know. And he was like, tell you what, man, I work Tuesday day shifts. You come in. And you work my day shifts. And he would sit on the other side of the bar. And then we would throughout the week or the weekend, he would like pull aside empty bottles. We'd fill them with water. And then we'd label them like vodka, gin, this, that. And then, you know, during the day shifts weren't that busy. He would sit on the other side of the bar and be like, all right, so let me get a Cosmopolitan, a margarita, a this or that. And he would just like ring, and I would be making him like, nope, put that down. And we'd just sit there and like, again.
So Tony Jones taught you how to bartend?
Oh, yeah.
No shit.
Tony Jones, baby. And, but I'll tell you, there's this one spot, I don't know if you know it. Do you know Amalfi's on La Brea? Mm-hmm. You know Amalfi's. Yeah, yeah. Upstairs, they have a little place called, well, Acme's next door. Acme right. is like a little, it's oh. like a theater company, but a lot of comedic theater and a lot of comedians have come out of there. And then Amalfi's next door. Yeah. And then upstairs is a place called Room 5 where they would do music and stand up. They had stand up shows. So I got a job working there. And I'll never forget that first night that I worked. It's always the first night, just like you went through. And we got just slammed. And I mean slammed. And I had this... My bar back. It was a tiniest bar. You couldn't even like.
He Up
was
in room 5. You bartended in room 5.
Yeah, no back shit. Before.
They always had the hottest girl bartenders when they did stand up.
They did
shows
have some.
There.
God. They were Russian.
No. My God.
Yes, they were two of them. But so I was working, and this kid was like bar backing for me, but it was so small, and he would take orders and then tell me, but it was so loud. I'd be making drinks and he'd be like, fuck it, Tony! And he would yell. I'm like, I don't shut. I'm like, stop. Because so he's telling me something I need to ring in for him that he already made and I had to keep track. And it was one of those nights too that when the night ended, you're like, feet are sore. The bucket's full of cash, but you don't even know where any of it goes. You've bought 4 drinks for people who you screwed up. You've yelled at maybe 2 people. You know, not you. I don't know. Have you ever yelled at anyone in your life? Have you ever gotten mad at anyone? You seem like the sweetest human being.
I don't know. I probably get my moments, you know. I mean, I have an ex-wife, so I have an ex-wife, so
yeah, I guess that.
I guess
I'm gonna go with a yes.
Yes, yeah.
Have you ever been in fist fights?
No,
you seem like you haven't.
Mm-mm. So, you in no brothers or sisters?
Mm-mm. No.
Oh. And children?
Yeah, two kids.
Yeah,
Natasha is 27. Alexander's 25.
All right.
Yeah.
Damn, that's killer.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Branson then. How the heck did you end up there and go there and you do there? And
Branson is a little town in Missouri. I was never planning to go to Branson because I would fly over Missouri and go, this is where those people who buy, you know, things that they advertise on television live. But I never expected to live there. And
isn't Branson, is it Christopher, is it Waiting for Guffman? What's the town Branson's from? What movie? They were all going to Branson. Was it Waiting for Guffman? I can't remember. I know Branson, I feel like it's from
like
a comedy.
Is it like a riverboat town? Like a casino town?
No, casinos. They did the King of the Hill episode that I was starring.
You were in that?
Yeah. Well, they wanted the kid wanted to write some jokes for Yakov Smirnov, so that was the premise of the skit.
How crazy is that?
I love it. Yeah. It's weird. It's weird. Anyway, so I'm doing well. I'm doing Vegas, Atlantic City. That's the late 1980s.
Did you have like a residency there?
Well, at that time there was no such thing. Yeah, it was more like you work, you know, for Steve Wynn. Now it's hard. It's funny to say you work for Steve Wynn,
yeah.
But I wasn't in that barbershop or whatever he, you know, whatever he got accused. Anyway, so I was working for him at Golden Nugget, Mirage, and then I would work for Trump. It's so weird. In Atlantic City. So I had.
And how many weeks a year are you doing between Vegas and Atlantic City?
Between Reno, Tahoe, and Vegas, probably about 20 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was doing pretty well during that time. And then I, you know, helped Reagan to, you know, get the wall down.
You did.
Yeah.
But I didn't see the writing on that wall.
Yeah, man.
The writing was pretty
all over.
All
you.
Over. Yes. And so so the Soviet Union collapses 1991. And David Letterman has a top 10 list on that night. Things that will now change that the Soviet Union is no longer there. I make number one on the list. Yakov Smirnov will be out of work. And I thought it was funny for about 6 months. And after that, none of my contracts in one shot, none of them were renewed.
Wow.
None of them.
None of them. So
you got
I
black
lost.
Seaballed, man.
Black seaballed.
Yeah. So then I'm in the tailspin. I'm like going, and I have two little kids.
Mm-hmm.
Just Alexander was like, you know, 6 months. Well, actually, when that happened, it was Natasha was just born. And so I start going to comedy clubs. That's the only places. But even that was not an easy sell anymore because all of a sudden it was just – there was no tension. I realized later on that I was just like an aspirin when you have a headache. You need an aspirin or you need an Advil.
Wow.
And I was – that headache was the Soviet Union. And then when the headache was over, why do you need an aspirin? Why do you need an Advil? So you put it in the shelf somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. So that wasn't working. So somebody suggested to me – it was actually Willie Nelson – that's it. Yeah. I know.
Have you ever smoked weed with Willie Nelson?
No.
No.
But I, you know, I was next to him.
Well, then you smoked weed with Willie Nelson.
So were
you friends with him?
No. It was just my agent was trying to find some kind of work.
Yeah.
And he said, they need a co-host for Farm Aid concert in Ames, Iowa. And I go, why would, first of all, they don't know who I am. I don't play to that audience. Why would, you know, But he said, listen, you don't have many choices, so they're offering some money. You
well,
should
Farm
go.
Aid was huge, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they weren't paying. It was more charity.
Yeah.
You know. And so I go to Farm Aid. Yeah, actually, Rozan and Tom Arnold were another co-hosts for with Willie.
Wow.
So they introduce me, and it's like 4,000, no, maybe 10,000 people. It's huge.
It was huge. Yeah.
And these people, they announce me, and these people give me standing ovation
wow.
before I walk down the stage. I went like, what the hell happened? But they watch Miller Lite commercial. They're the, you know, oh, they're wow.
the middle
America, yeah. yeah. So
that motherfucking Miller Lite commercial just keeps on.
Well, back then it wasn't like there were thousands of commercials
right.
on
right.
thousands if you of were, channels. You, there was yeah. like 4, 5, 7.
Yeah. You're basically the Spuds McKenzie popularity
whoa,
for Miller Lite.
Ryan,
popularity
have some
for
goddamn
Miller Lite.
Respect.
I do. I love
thank
Spuds.
You. Thank you for stopping him. Yes, yeah. thank you. Because you
yeah,
don't Lord, know
yeah,
where he's
going.
Gonna
on
yeah,
on.
Yeah.
It's just
you're
very
the Bo Knows. Is that better? Remember
very
the Bo Knows that?
So anyway, So my career, so Willie says, you know, you should go to Branson because he said I couldn't work there because it's not a place for me. But he tried there. His style, the smoking weed, I mean, that's a very Christian community. They didn't buy. So he didn't. But he said, but you will probably do well there. And so that was, and then I start thinking, okay, in Branson, they don't know that the Soviet Union collapsed. So I'll give that a shot, yeah. right? So I go there, and they embrace me pretty. I mean, it took a little while. It took maybe a year to build the business. But
what business?
Comedy.
You built your club there?
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I know you told us.
I rented the theater.
Okay.
And start performing. Just me performing.
Just you, one-man shows?
One-man
like
show
night.
Every night. And then my wife would sell things in the gift shop. And that was, we were just starting from scratch. There was no, and so we were living in Pacific Palisades here. $2.5 million home, everything was, and now all of a sudden no income, and the mortgage is the same.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like, I got to do something.
Yeah.
And so that was a tough moment there for, not moment, long moment. And then it kind of took off. And then I bought my theater, it's 2,000 seats, and it was packed, you know, and I would do 2 shows a day. I would do 400 shows a year.
Damn.
Holy and they all
shit.
Sell out? Or?
Not every. During season time, season would be like four months out of the year.
You do 400 shows?
A year, yeah.
Good.
For
God.
Years.
For how many years?
23 years. Not
what?
Not 400.
But is it a tourist town?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Tourist
town.
Why? What makes it such
a lake,
tourist
right?
town?
Just lake and just simple folks kind of. It's like Vegas without gambling, without cussing,
sure.
without. So it's a Christian kind of a group of people who like going there, and they had, and I somehow fit into that, what they wanted to see, and that's how it all progressed. And knock on wood, I mean, it was really a savior. It was emergency landing for me, but it actually gave me like a laboratory of laughter, because what I'm doing today is totally because of what I did in Branson.
Because yeah. Willie Nelson told you to go there.
Yeah.
That's fucking amazing.
Mm-hmm. But it's there's also an element of like you follow what gets put in front of you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? A lot of people, I know for me sometimes I get so stuck on like I want to go to LA and in 10 days,
right.
you know, be buying a house on Fifth Avenue. You were smart enough to look at what was in front of you and be like, hey, this is there. Let me go try that. That's amazing.
You took Willie Nelson's advice, and Willie Nelson was right. He was right. You did well
right.
there. I mean, you did more than well. How many years did you say again?
23. Well, now it's been 26 years that I, 1993 was the year I started there.
And how long is each show? You do an hour?
No, it's about 2 hours.
Holy crap.
Do you change it? How often do you change that routine?
About every 5 years or so. Because it was more of a variety show. It had Russian dancers at some point. When I started doing well, I can afford to hire people. And so I would have 60 people working at the theater to just support my show.
Yeah.
But it worked out well.
How's the gift shop doing?
And when I'm not there, it's not doing that well. But when I'm there, it's doing great. Yeah.
Gosh.
You've done so many things, so many fantastic things. Do you, I hear stories about people who win championships or these incredible moments, and as it's happening, it's happening. But do you ever just pause and look back and listen to what you just said to us and reflect on that? You've written for the President of the United States. I mean, Carson 7 times. You took care of your family. Do you ever just think about all the shit you've done? Because it's pretty fucking amazing.
Thank you. And it means a lot to me. I, like most people, I don't see it as big as others see it, just because I'm in it.
Right.
And I'm proud of it. I've done some really amazing stuff that we haven't even scratched the surface here, but from my perspective, when I look back, yes, I go, wow, that was amazing. That, oh my, and that was amazing. I put up a mural in Ground Zero.
What do you mean?
Well, I painted a painting on the night of the attack, and it was called America's Heart, and you can look it up online, and it was very interesting, inspirational, and you can go to my website, yakov.com, you'll see it. But it was something that I was painting on the night of the attack, because I somehow took it personally, because I was sworn in at the Statue of Liberty ceremonies, which was the same place where all of the images that we were getting on the air from the airplanes crashing into the towers, they were filming it from Governor's Island and Ellis Island, and that's where I was sworn in. So for me, it was the happiest moment of my life being sworn in, and then here is this saddest moment, and so I wanted to fix it. So I started painting, and when I was
You always painted?
I have a degree in art from Russia that I was a teacher of art. So I painted, but not as much as I painted.
Were you working oils?
I do acrylic, but it looks, I do texture that it looks like
oil. I use
oil.
Russian dressing. I just do my own thing.
It's very interpretive.
So I painted this painting, and as I was painting it, I pictured it as a mural at the Ground Zero. It had to be there. So I took this on, and I was living in Branson at that time, and I would fly to New York and try to find people who would let me do that. And it was just because I felt like it was something I had to do.
And is it still there?
No, it was there for a year and a half.
Wow.
And it was 200 feet tall by 150 feet wide.
Whoa. Jesus. Yeah. You painted it?
I painted the original painting, and then I paid for reproducing it on vinyl that went up. And it was remarkable because nobody at that time wanted to talk to. Security was so high and everything was. So it took me a year of going back and forth of trying to find somebody that would maybe allow me, and City Hall said no, and the governor said no, and the mayor said no. Everybody said no, and so finally I found one place where the people lived in Ohio, and they owned that building, one building that got damaged by explosions, and it was covered with scaffolding, and the scaffolding had on it like a canvas material to protect so people it doesn't fall on people's heads. So it looked like a, this was supposed to be, I'm supposed to paint on this thing. And so finally they told me, you can put it up for 10 days. If you can get all the permits, all the insurances, and this was like already like August. And I'm like going, wow, how am I going to do this? So I call.
Do you have any neighbors that could fill those forms?
Yeah. So I called the union workers, steel union workers, because they were the ones who putting up like big billboards yeah. around New York. And so I said, could I meet you there in that building? And they were not, they didn't want to, but they said, okay, if you're coming in from Branson and you're willing to make a trip, we'll meet you there.
That sounds like a Willie Nelson song, coming in from Branson.
Yeah. Yeah. So I go there and it's like a scene from, you know, some mafia movie. You know, there's one light bulb. We're in the basement of this building that is destroyed. And this guy's coming in and they're all like in hard heads and union workers, you know, and they cuss in like, and they're Italians or Polish or whatever. They're like tough guys, mm-hmm. you know, and they're, what the hell do we want to be here? We hate this place. We were the ones carrying bodies out of this place. Oh, we don't like it. And I, what do you want from us? And I go, well, I want to put up a mural. And I got, you know, some paperwork that the owners allowed me or said if I can get this. And I want to get it done by 9/11. And this is like end of August. And because I said the people will be watching this and they need to see some kind of hope. And it was American flag in the shape of the heart and on the with Statue of Liberty in the front ground. So it was really kind of, and the signature underneath was the human spirit is not measured by the size of a heart, but the size of an act, but by the size of a heart. And that was, I said, I feel like it has to be there so people in America can see it and it will help them to overcome this. And they're like going,
they're like, are you the Miller Lite guy?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
You don't know that guy.
Yeah. So,
guys, wait till you see this girl in the middle. Oh my God.
So they're like, they said, you want it by when? I go, and I
how
said,
how much time is this now? Like 3 weeks or the end of August? So
10 yeah. days.
No.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. It was a month and okay. Yeah. So, and they're like going, you know, I said, I'll pay for it. And they go, you don't have enough money to pay for it. Trump doesn't have enough money to pay for it. You would not be able to do that. And so they're leaving. And I'm like going, what?
Yeah.
And then they see, I didn't even get the chance to show them the mock-up. And I had a mock-up made of that, of the way it could look on that building.
On the building, yeah.
And they go, what's this? And I go, it's what I'm trying to put up. And then they quiet down, stop cussing, and then they passed it around, and the leader said, "We'll do it."
Wow!
And I go, "Really?" I said, "Do I have all the paperwork I need?" And he said, "No, you don't, and you'll never get it." But we'll do it anyway.
To them, no one was going to be able to get that paperwork, right?
No.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. There is no way.
Wow. That is
amazing. And I said, why are you doing this? And the guy.
And he's like, well, do you want it up or not?
The guy said, you know what? I just want to drive by this with my son and tell him that I helped put this up.
Wow.
Oh, man, I just got chills. That is fantastic.
And they became like strategic. Said, okay, here's where you order the vinyl. Tell them that you calling from us. They probably will give you a better deal. but it has to be rush ordered because it has to be shipped from Ohio by trucks. It's huge.
Huge.
It's
so huge. 200
feet tall.
By 150?
By 150 wide.
So 150. So that's, oh my God, that's like almost 15
it's
stories.
It's a 10-story, 10-story building.
10-story and then like
man,
7.5 stories
yeah,
wide.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It was huge.
And a year and a half?
And it stayed there a year and a half, yeah. And so they showed up.
You pulled all that off in a month?
No, I pulled it off in a year.
No, but, I mean,
oh, yeah, yeah, I was able to.
Finalize.
I called
it
the
month.
People in Ohio, and they said, you have to realize we have to, like, work over the weekend, and it would be double time. And I said, whatever you can do would be great. And then they came back to me and said, no, we're going to do it. We're going to do it for regular price. So it was like, it costed me like $100,000 to just get stuff there and get this printed and made it work. But the guys came, 50 of them, 50 union workers.
Wow.
And they strategized it because they said, okay, we can't do it.
I mean, do they have to shut down the street to do this and stuff?
No. They came in on the weekend. And they said that 9/11 is they're going to be the Senate and Congress. They're coming to see the site before this is all going to be happening.
Yeah.
So we can't do it before that. We have to do it right after that. So it was like on the 7th of September. They said we'll come in on the 8th or whatever the date was Saturday. And we'll do it quietly, and we'll just get it done. And they showed up, all of them, 50 of them. And they spent 12 hours crawling around at like little ants all over the building.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man. And and when something was a little crooked, they went back up and said, no, that's not good enough. And they did it. And it was just remarkable to see that thing up. It was like the idea was a year ago, and then you see the president coming down, and that thing is in the background. And later I learned that the director who was directing all the cameras, because it was all one location, he had to direct all the shots. He was there with the Congress and the Senate and the mayor and the blah, 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 whatever, the day before, day after, whatever, day before. And he was saying, I got nothing to show here. Everything is gray and dark, and you need some hope, and there's nothing here. And he told me that I was doing a Broadway show later on, and then he met me and he said, I just
he's doing a Broadway show, huh?
Just drops that in there.
Yeah.
so that was a surprise to me because I didn't realize. I mean, I had the intuitive feeling that there has to be something there, but he was like saying we got there on Monday, and there was this mural, and I'm like, thank God that there's something there. Who put it up? And nobody knew.
Wow.
They didn't know.
Because there's no way they would have got the paperwork to be
right.
able to put it up.
Right. Right.
How about that? That's fantastic.
You badass.
Yeah, you are, dude. I mean, I know, as you said, we have just scratched the surface, but thank you. This has been great, man. Thank you for coming on and sharing all these stories.
My pleasure.
Thank you for thank you for everything you've done for our country.
Son of a bitch. You've done way more than we have.
I never heard it in that order.
Yeah.
Will you one more time please plug your website, your social media, whatever you'd like there?
Website is yakov.com, YAKOV.com. And just find me there.
Yeah, go over there, check them out. You're going to have dates, and clearly, by the man you are, I'm sure you have some more tricks up your sleeve of what's yet to come. So if you hear of Yakov in your area or something's coming up, please check it out. You're a great guy. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
As always, jlarsoncomedy.com, J Larson Comedy on all social media.
RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all social media. We'll talk to you all next Tuesday.